All House Judiciary to order. In attendance, we have Representative Gruenberg, Representative Lynn, Representative Samuels, and Representative Holmes. Chairman Ramos overflew today, and we're still expecting Representative Coghill to join us. We've got two items on the agenda today. House Bill 25 we'll start with. Representative Seaton. Start the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. I was asked at the last meeting to look into the direct and indirect, or explicitly and implicitly. We have you a memo that shows that the language incorporated in the bill currently does occur 192 times in the statutes, whereas explicitly or implicitly only occurs once. I might draw your attention to page 3 that, and just looking through a few examples that we gave you under definitions there, it's directly or indirectly serve, that's under a utility, that's under O2, section 02. Under the next one, under section 05, who participates directly or indirectly. So again, we have kind of the active type thing. Under corporations and associations, this is on the last page, I'm just skipping to that. Affiliate means a person who directly or indirectly controls. So it's the same type of thing. And then there, under juror tampering, it's a person directly or a person directly or indirectly communicates. So it's used in somewhat the similar fashions. And the thesaurus, definition is indirectly, not in a forthright manner, such as he answered very indirectly. So I think it's, common knowledge, common language, common usage of what indirectly means. And I think the public would be, could clearly understand what the statute means if we leave that wording the way it is. Representative Coghill had requested that the drafter be here. After we prepared the memo, I talked directly with him, and he said he no longer wanted the drafter here for that.
Any questions on the memo? The public testimony on this bill has been closed, so are there any other questions for the sponsor at this point? And what we've got is we've got one amendment in front of us. Representative Gruenberg, do you still want to offer the amendment?
Well, the thing is that I think I do. And the reason is I obviously haven't had time to look at 192 hits, or I'd be directly at API. I think that I don't have a problem with the word directly. That's pretty clear. I believe it's our duty on this committee to make sure things are drafted so clearly and unequivocally that they will be uniformly interpreted by judges, juries, and lawyers across the state and over time. Because what we don't want is one case interpreting a statute one way and one case interpreting it another way. And my concern is, quote, indirectly allows. The word indirectly in conjunction with allowing something. I don't see any of the examples using the word indirectly in conjunction with something passive like allowing. It's different if you indirectly communicate. That is doing something actively through a third person. And that's pretty clear and unequivocal. Or indirectly serving the public in the case of a utility. Or participating indirectly in a boxing match as a promoter or something like that. Or controlling a corporation indirectly through a third person. But indirectly allowing something is much more, is much less precise. And I think the question would be, does that mean that the person is just passively allowing something to go on, or actually not prohibiting it? Or through a third person, I say to Mr. Lynn here, you can tell him it's okay to ski on my land. And it could be interpreted in all those manners. And if it's not our intent to allow the broadest possible use of that term, it's going to be subject to all kinds of interpretation. And actually, some people may more narrowly do it. But if you implicitly allow something, that means that you have not taken an action which signifies that you are directly allowing it. It's not direct or indirect, it's directly, or I think that you don't have to say explicitly, but it implicitly does it. And so I have an amendment here to do that, and let me pass it around, give it to Jane. Well, you already got it.
Okay. 81, line 9, delete indirectly.
And I'm not pride of authorship. If you can come up with something else or some other argument that will reduce any vagueness or ambiguity in the interpretation of this, it'll meet my need, and that's my only concern here.
Seaton, you got a comment for, you got the memo.
All I can say is that it's obviously common in the statutes to use the terms directly and indirectly, and those are, that's a number of times they're found together in the statute to provide that, you know, breadth and clarity of what is meant. And but it's your call, Mr. Chairman.
May I ask a question?
You want to move the amendment first?
I move the amendment.
And I object. So yes, Representative Grunberg.
I'm wondering if you or Ms. Shows have looked and seen whether the phrase indirectly allow appears anywhere else or anything like that.
For the record, Katie Schau, staff to Representative Seaton. Representative Grunberg, I did a quick search for indirectly allow and did not come up with a hit, but I did not look through the 192 hits for any passive reference, so we did not do a comprehensive analysis of that.
Yeah, okay, thank you. I appreciate the work you put in on this.
Any other comments on the amendment, on amendment number one? And not being a lawyer, I had to get between two, but if I'm going to maintain the objection, if the drafter actually did the research on the term, and did enough research to do the memo and do all this, I'm going to go with the drafter. Sorry, Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chair, what is our other attorney on the panel here? What's her take on that?
Lynn, Representative Holmes, do you have any comment on amendment number one?
Yes. I share the concern that I think what we all want here is to, I don't think any of us are trying to change Representative Seaton's intent. I think we're all just trying to clarify it. I don't believe that any of us here are trying to either broaden or narrow your intent. We're just trying to actually most accurately capture it. And the words directly and indirectly have caused me a little bit of concern. Not directly. Directly, I think most people would agree what directly allow is. It's indirectly allow. It creates some fuzziness around the outside. My question is whether we have something in front of us that would actually be clearer. So if I may, I do have a question for the amendment author. Whether implicitly allow is going to be a better term? Is it going to more clearly help us draw that line? If it is, I'm in favor of it. I'm not 100% convinced that it's going to be a clearer definition that we can find elsewhere in law. Can you speak to that?
Mr. Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't I think it will, but I don't know. And I don't know whether the bill drafter did any research at all on that term. May I just inquire for a second? Did the bill drafter, who drafted this?
Through the chair, Dennis Bailey.
You know whether he did any research on the term indirectly allowed?
Other than drafting the bill and the language that came over to us, I mean, I presume that they're using the drafting manual. Like I say, this term, the term directly and indirectly does occur multiple times in our statutes, whereas explicitly and implicitly does not. It's a single reference in the statutes to explicitly and implicitly. So, you know, my take is that I understand what indirectly allow means. I'm really not sure what implicitly allow means because I don't.
Maybe one way of, and I don't know, it just seemed to me it was a little vague. Maybe we could define the term indirectly allow or something. I mean, I just want to be sure we don't have something that's subject to misinterpretation.
I'd like to move the bill along today, too. Representative Holmes.
Thank you. I actually did have a conversation this afternoon with the bill drafter, and I couldn't come up with anything that I thought was far superior to directly and indirectly, nor could he while we were on the phone. And I'm not 100% convinced that the language we have in front of us is either. I would like to have it as specific as possible, but we've had this bill now, 3 days in front of the committee, and we have yet to come up with something that I believe is vastly superior. If down the line we find that this is unclear, we could always go back. And the one thing that we did come up with, the bill drafter and I on the phone, was we could always go back and say indirectly means, for includes, and we could come up with a list of things if later we feel that's necessary. But I'd be inclined to move the bill along as written in front of us.
One thing that we can do is it's got a road in front of it still. It's got to get to the rules. It's got to get to the floor. It's got to go through the other body. And if we're all on board with the concept of what the bill is, so Representative Grunberg, if you want to offer the amendment, I'm going to maintain an objection to it. But
no,
you want to talk to the drafter still,
no,
see if there's a better way to build a mousetrap, that's fine. But
I'm going to withdraw the amendment.
Okay. So Amendment 1 has been withdrawn, and Representative Seaton, I would expect questions from Representative Holmes, Representative Grunberg, maybe Mr. Bailey. You can all get together. If there's a better way, that's fine. If there's not a better way, then we'll
leave. Mr. Chair, would you want to move the bill at this time?
Please.
Mr. Chair, it's my pleasure to move House Bill number 25-LS0174/A with attached amendments, if any, and there's no fiscal note, I don't believe. There's no fiscal note.
There are no amendments, there is no committee substitute, and there is no fiscal note. Thank you. Is there an objection to moving the bill from committee? Hearing none, House Bill 25 will see it on the floor.
Thank you. Good bill.
Thank you.
Okay, next on the agenda is
Chairman.
Yes, Representative Seaton.
Just for clarification, there is a zero fiscal note.
Zero fiscal note, excuse me. Yes, zero fiscal note.
I amend my motion for a zero fiscal note.
Okay, next on the agenda is House Bill number 7, an act relating to false caller identification. I believe that we have two amendments and a CS. So the first thing we'd like to do is have an amendment to adopt 25-LS0057/C Bannister as a working document.
Where's the
motion to adopt the CS?
So moved.
Is there an objection to adopting 25-LS0057/C as a working document? And does everybody have it?
I'm getting it. I thought I had it.
Okay, there's no objection to the adoption of the CS. And before us, perhaps before we get to the amendments, Representative Lynn, if you or your staff could maybe walk through the changes to the CS.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My staff, Dirk Marbert, is prepared to do that.
Okay, let's hold on 1 second here. Are you ready to go here, Representative Grunberg?
Go ahead.
No, we'll wait until you're ready.
Okay. I don't think I've seen this.
Take a brief at ease.
The question is, did we adopt the CS? Because I'd like to for the purpose of discussion, until I know what the CS is, I'd like to object so I just know what I'm voting on.
Okay, then what we'd like to say is the motion has been made for adoption of the...
I withdraw the motion.
CS, and it has been objected to. So,
let's leave it like that.
So before we adopt it, maybe Mr. Moffitt can go through what the changes are. For the record, you are.
For the record, my name is Dirk Moffitt, staff to Representative Bob Lynn. I think the one change was is we removed or cause harm because the word defraud covered harm.
Page and line, do you have a?
Line. Line 5, page 1,
okay.
Following system with the intent to defraud. And it did say or cause harm, and now it just says defraud.
Mr. Chair, the original bill does not say or cause. Oh, okay. What was added on line 5 of the CS is, quote, with the intent to defraud.
Is that correct, Mr. Moffitt? Page 1,
with
line 5?
With the intent to defraud, and then that was in the original text, and then what was removed or cause harm. That was removed. Amendment 1 was delete the, insert A, and I believe that was page 1, line 7. Okay.
And we had, Chair, we had state.
Try.
You want me to be the chairman?
Ranking member.
Are we
in the middle of a?
Are we on?
On
take a brief at ease.
Take a brief at ease.
Thanks.
Back to order, and just for the record,
switch chairs.
Representative Caldwell is now the chairman by default.
Last one of the meeting.
And my apologies to the committee for being late. I had the privilege of going to see the governor for a few minutes, and I didn't want to lose that.
Okay, is this the old one?
At your expense, sorry.
That's the original one?
So, Mr. Gruenberg, you were asking questions of the CS?
Well, I wanted to know what the difference between the C version and the A version are. And Mr. Moffitt, I think, was taking us through that. I don't seem to have my...
So, Mr. Moffitt... Where are we on your description?
We were. I'll just start from the beginning and just
not
run
that
through
far
it. How am I going to make you have to go through it?
It's not that long. Page 1, line 5, following system, we inserted with the intent to defraud, and we took out or cause harm.
You just added with intent to defraud from the last version that we had.
That was Representative Samuels.
I'm sorry.
To the Chair, Representative Samuels, would you repeat that?
I believe from the last version that we had. Okay.
It was, yes, there was two amendments, so one superseded the other, right. I think that's true. Yeah, I think the Third Amendment actually took the.
Little confused here.
The intent to defraud, and what was the other language that was hooked onto that?
Cause harm.
Or cause harm. I think effective Amendment 3 took that off. So, Representative Samuels. Now we get to the people who really know.
I admire your faith.
Hi, for the record, my name's Jane Pearson, Committee 8 to House Judiciary. And the changes that were made from A to C are as follows. The first one was page 1, line 7. We changed the word the to A. And then the next one was changes that were made in Amendment 3, which we later amended, which the first one would be page 1, line 4. We deleted the word knowingly. Page 1, line 5, following system, we inserted intent to defraud and remove the language or to cause harm, which was originally in Amendment 3. On page 1, line 10, we deleted knowingly. On page 1, line 11, following system, we inserted with intent to defraud. And we slightly changed Amendment 3, which was or cause harm at the end. And page 2, line 4, there was a grammatical change. On page 2.
Wait. What was the grammatical change?
We went from a semicolon to a period.
I don't see, through the chair, I do not see a period on page 2, line 4.
I do not see a period either, but a semicolon there seems to work better.
Okay.
So I think that was probably the drafter picked that one up.
Okay, go ahead.
On page 2, line 5. We deleted all materials, and then we added that the meaning to intent to defraud would be the meaning given in AS 1146-990.
I will remove my objection.
So that brings the CS for House Bill number 7, Judiciary, with the C version of Bannister dated 2207 before us. So we have amendments. From the committee. Was there anything else you wanted to say with regard to the bill?
No, Representative Coghill, just to move the amendments.
I see one amendment.
Number 7, is it?
For me, so.
Which one's that?
So, Representative Lynn, since I've got yours numbered, why don't I go ahead and take yours first? That is the amendment number A.3 by Bannister. We'll call that amendment number 1 to the CS.
Amendment number 1 to CS. Mr. Chair, I move amendment 1 to the CS.
And I'll object to hear your explanation.
Mr. Moffitt, would you explain it to us?
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, the last committee meeting, there was some thought to whether we should make this, if someone does more than a certain number, that it be a stricter crime than opposed to somebody who does fewer times. So we came up with the number 25. A Class B misdemeanor if false information is inserted into 25 caller identification systems. Delete them in the amendment. It says a violation of this section is a Class B misdemeanor if the false information is inserted fewer than 25 caller identification systems, and a Class A misdemeanor if the false information is inserted into 25 or more caller information systems. So basically, we've made it so that if someone does more than 25 false identification calls, it'll up it to a Class A, which is a year in jail, from a Class B, which would be 3 months.
So I know the Department of Law had mentioned the number 25, and they said that was a rather arbitrary number. Did you do any research on why that number would be any better than 50?
Through the chair, Representative Cockle, no, we didn't really do any research. The number came about by 50 seemed a little too high, 25. So it is arbitrary. We did originally have 5, which was based on a felony where you're trying to impersonate somebody five times. It's a bigger crime. But,
Representative Holmes?
I was just wondering, since I believe we have Annie Carpinetti in the audience from the Criminal Division, if maybe she might be interested in addressing that issue of whether 25 is an appropriate number.
I might give her a chance to catch up. Is that something you care to do, Ms. Carpinetti?
It is a rather arbitrary number. It just seemed like when you...
Why don't you come on forward and get you on tapes. That way Sue over here can figure out what we're doing. And she has to go back and listen to all this stuff.
My name is Annie Carpinetti. I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law, and We had suggested 25 or less than 25 as a B misdemeanor, just because an estimate of what the harm that you do and the penalty for that harm. It's a reasonably arbitrary number. I mean, I could,
I think Representative Sam has a question for you.
Yes.
Not on the number. I'm starting to sound like a lawyer.
It's contagious.
Is inserted in fewer than 25 caller identification systems. So if I have whatever the software is that says when I call Bob and it says that I am the Bank of America, if I've inserted it into my system, or have I inserted it into their system? So if I make 1,000 phone calls, but I've only downloaded the software one time, is that one offense? Because it is inserted in fewer than 25 caller identification systems. I guess caller identification system means the listing of a caller's name, telephone number that is shown to the recipient. I still don't make sure I'm perfectly clear on.
Through the chair, I think probably the sponsor is more competent to answer that question. My impression would be I act once, and my act by inserting false information is then transmitted to less than 25. That would be one Class B misdemeanor. But I stand to be corrected by somebody who knows.
Mr. Moffitt? Care to answer that one?
Yeah, our intent was that if somebody called up each time it appeared on the caller identification system of a recipient, that should be considered one act. So if you called up more than one person using one set of false caller identification, those should be considered separate acts. But it probably could be made clear.
I have found in my short time in the legislature, intent and verbiage don't always travel well together. So, for example, if you insert it, that is certainly one question. But then into a caller identification system, is a individual person's phone a system that we would have to be looking at that this would be inserted into? Or would it be into a system that would be an automatic caller system where they insert a singular number that goes out to 5,000 and they can say, I don't care what your intent was, the verb says insert it into a caller ID system. And so we need to make that very clear, I think. If we want to make sure that for 25 individual home phones to receive a false identifier, that those are in fact 25 separate problems under this. Can you help me with that?
I understand, Representative Coghill. I got this basically from legal this morning. And then I got a second amendment that was offered to me by Lindsay Holm and her ABLE staff, Mita. And I think their amendment actually answers that question a little bit better than this one I got this morning from legal, where
maybe
they talk about transmitting.
Mr. Chair.
Good. Yeah. Good. Could I tell from the sound from the other room that I started with the wrong amendment? Mr. Gruenberg.
I would make a request that we do something that's a little bit unusual here.
Watch out, I got the gavel, so I don't like unusual.
Okay, if the members could look at both of them side by side, and then we could, take whichever one looks the best.
Well, I think we're going to be doing that, but I'd rather do that in order, and that is to either, at the request of Mr. Moffitt and with the agreement of Representative Lynn, maybe what we should do is withdraw this amendment, because we do have a motion on the table, and then go ahead and have the other amendment brought forward, and if you want that to be the beginning place, then amend the things that you want into it. I think that's probably the cleaner way to do it. And so,
okay, Mr. Chair, let's see what Representative Holmes had in mind, and I'll be prepared to do that if you like.
Can we discuss them both?
I'd rather not discuss both of them.
Through the chair,
go ahead and withdraw the motion.
They're almost exactly the same, but
I withdraw the motion then. And I think Representative Holmes had something to add.
Sorry for the persnickety nature in which I'm doing this, but
not at all.
Remembering that people have to make sense of this when we're done at the end of the day. Representative Holm, the other amendment has been withdrawn. You have an amendment?
Yes, I would like to offer the amendment in front of you. Unfortunately, it doesn't have any actual numbers to
which
read.
One?
One.
That would be called amendment number two.
Number two.
Which one is that?
Is that true, Suzanne? That is amendment number two, right?
Number two.
It has Holmes on it.
Object.
So, Representative Holmes, would you be instructing us, please?
Yes, thank you. I actually took the prior amendment that has now been withdrawn as a starting point and had the same line of questioning that I've just heard here come to mind, which is, what are we counting? Are we counting the number of times I type it in to a caller ID system, or the number of actual calls that are placed? And I actually worked with Ms. Carpinetti here to try to clarify that language. And if it's all right with you, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have Ms. Carpinetti speak to the language as well, since she helped.
The recipient issue, I think, is probably the key to this one. So, Ms. Carpinetti?
Well, through the chair, I just suggested this as clearer to me, that it's one act, typing it in, and then the harm, you decide what level of crime, misdemeanor crime, you want it to be as to how many people it actually reaches. So that was why I suggested this language. I thought it was clearer than the prior amendment. And if there are any questions, I'm happy.
Representative Samuels?
Thank you, and that answers my questions. The only question I've got, Ms. Carpenter, is on the word information under both number one and number two. Would it be clearer to say information into a caller ID system and then continue on with that as transmitted? Or do you think that the just inserts false information? Do you think
it might be clearer to say inserts false information into a caller ID system?
I would agree with that.
I would offer that amendment to amendment two is after the word information. So it would say a Class B misdemeanor if a person inserts false information and then add into a caller identification system that is transmitted to less than. And then under number two, inserts false information into a caller identification system that is transmitted to. And continue from there, adding that phrase into both those lines.
Through the chair, Representative Samuels, the caller identification system is what the recipient has on his end. It's not what transmits the false caller ID. That could be anything. The caller ID is what the recipient has on his end. So if you're inserting false caller information, you're transmitting it to someone's caller ID system.
I'm going to object to your motion so that we can have this discussion. So just for clarity, help me with where you were putting this again. Maybe it only needs to go in the one place.
Have your information.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, if that is what you call the caller ID system is the recipient's end, then it would be inappropriate to go in there.
So you're withdrawing the amendment?
I would listen to Ms.
You know,
Chairman.
I think that by cross-referencing violation of A of this section is a Class A misdemeanor, I think we take care of your concern. Okay. So I think we don't need that. May I make a suggestion, though?
I'd like to withdraw my amendment to amendment number two.
Okay. Ms. Carpinetti?
Purely a drafting issue, I would just say on amendment number two, the provision says except as provided in paragraph two of this section. Mm-hmm. I would move that to the very beginning of that paragraph, and that's just a drafting technique. Mm-hmm. That is what at least we do when we draft statutes. When we're making an exception, we put it at the beginning rather than at the end.
Yeah.
I don't think it would make much of a difference in terms. I think it would read maybe a little bit better, but it's just when we read it, we all think of it that way. That's the way.
So, through the chair.
Bloomberg.
So it would come paren C, close paren, except as provided in 2 of this section, comma, a violation of A of this section is?
No, excuse me, it would be paren C, close paren, a violation of A of this section is, paragraph 1, except as provided in 2 of this section, a class B misdemeanor.
Oh, I see, so it goes after the 1.
Yes.
It would go after paren 1, the words except as provided in 2 of this section, would that be the colon then?
Be a comma.
Comma.
Yeah. A class B misdemeanor if a person inserts false information that's transmitted to less than 25 call recipients, semicolon. Put the semicolon there.
Yeah. We don't want this to become a panda joke. Eat shoots and leaves. We were watching on it. We were watching a baby panda.
So that is suggested as an amendment. Representative Grunberg?
I'll make that.
I'll make that amendment. And do we have, you have that close enough? Is there any objection to that grammatical amendment? Okay, so amendment to amendment number 2 then is pass. Okay, so let me just make note of this so that Representative Grunberg?
What I'm wondering, and this goes somewhat, I'm going to sort of ask a line of questioning, if I may.
Mr. Grunberg, you've been allowed a lot of latitude in this committee and will continue doing it for just a little while.
Thank you. Right now, we have 25 calls, and I've been a little bit concerned that that may make it hard to prosecute. I liked the idea originally of 5 calls because otherwise it could be difficult for the district attorney and the police to find 25 different incidents. And my first question to you is, might that make it easier to get a conviction in a case that deserves prosecution?
Through the chair. Yes, 5 or less would be probably easier to prove than 25. It's just my response, I think, at the last hearing was we have phone records that might make it easier than going out and finding 25 individuals or as compared to 5 individuals. But yes, of course, less than 5 is easier to prove than 25.
Mr. Chair, I am concerned this is only a misdemeanor. I realize it's a year in jail, but it's a long time for a person involved. But with the scarce resources of the whole justice system, I'm concerned that we might have something that would not be used in cases where it should be if we have it this high. And I would recommend, I'm kind of talking to see where the committee's will is, either reducing the figure 25 or at the very least, the way it's written now, I'm looking for the Class A misdemeanor. It says transmitted to 25 or more call recipients or 25 or more times to the same call recipient. That could require you to have a whole lot of calls before you got up to 25 in Category A or Category B. At the very least, if you're going to keep a large number, it should be or a combination of both. But I would think that we're making this more complicated. And I would recommend, I'm wondering just before I make a motion, what the committee and everybody's thought would be to lower that 25 figure. And I know that I think it was Mr. Moffitt's idea originally, or maybe Mr. Seeker, or somebody, to go down to 5. But someplace, if we don't want to go that low, then someplace between the two.
I think, Representative Grunberg, I think it's a worthwhile discussion. And before I add my piece into it, I think I had Representative Samuels, you had your hand up.
Yeah. On the number, I could ask Ms. Carpinetti. I'm going to assume that if somebody goes to the trouble that they're going to tell somebody that they're a bank or a broker or some trying to get passwords and account numbers, I'm assuming that's kind of the scam that's going on. I mean, I'm guessing that if I'm going to enter that into if I'm going to enter that on my phone, I'm probably going to buy a list and make. You're never going to do less than 25. You're going to blast it. You're going to get hundreds, unless you have a very specific target in mind. You know,
Representative
Holmes, you know, I know she got an inheritance because I read the newspaper and bing, 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 and I'm going to try to scam one person. I would think that if you're after this type of thing, you're going to go and get a list of senior citizens or whatever, and you're going to hope for a victim out of your hundreds of phone calls. I would guess that would be the way that the scam is pulled, but I don't know.
Before we do, that was kind of directed at Ms. Carbonetti. Have you any comment on that before I go to Max or Mr.
Sniffen? I don't know if Mr. Sniffen is online.
Oh, that's a good
just kind of know. I mean, how do these scams work?
Mr. Sniffen, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Did you hear the question right? Yes, we can hear you just fine.
Yes, I did. Thank you, Chairman. I'm not sure that we're aware in our section of people using this identification spoofing in the manner that it was suggested by Representative Samuels there, that it was somebody targeting one person specifically or a group of people specifically, but that certainly would be one way that, folks might use this kind of technology. And I think as a practical matter, though, and Ms. Carpinetti can speak to this too, is most of the people who are committing this kind of fraud against Alaska are out-of-state folks. And I don't know how much how many resources the criminal division has to prosecute these misdemeanors for folks at these caller ID centers or call centers outside of Alaska. So the number of calls is something that I don't think is going to be the issue when it comes to the practicality of enforcing this this kind of bill.
Mr. Sniffen, I think Representative Gruenberg has a question for you as well.
Well, I can see this being used in a totally different way for prosecution. And because the term intent to defraud was so broadly defined here, it's an intent to injure someone's interest or an intent to use deception. And I could see this being a very good tool in the field of domestic violence, too, where you have somebody who is just trying to get at somebody particular, and they may or may not do it 25 times. And I want this bill, with all due respect to the author of the bill, to be able to be used in that sense as well. Not necessarily something that would ever come within Mr. Sniffen's purview, but something that would be important in the field of family law and important in the field of domestic violence. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to lower it, because you may not well be able to prove 25 times, particularly if somebody goes to person A's home and does it, person B's home and does it. And you may only, he may have, or she may have done it a dozen times, but you may only be able to prove 5 or 10.
So maybe that brings up an interesting question, and maybe Ms. Carbonetti can help us. What's the timing issue here? For example, if you have somebody that does 14 calls in week one and 14 calls, now, let's just say he does 20 calls in 1 week and 20 calls in another week and another month. Those are going to be different charges, aren't they?
Mr. Chairman, I think those would be individual entries reaching one entry into a computer or a telephone reaching 14 people. I think they would be separate charges. Yes, I think you're correct.
So the question that kind of comes to my mind then is, if you have a scam artist that has a certain clientele, you're just going to make sure that they do 18, 20 at a time. To them, it's worth the risk of a misdemeanor charge, and just once a month do a 20-call scam. Or let's just say intimidation of some type. And following on to what Representative Samuels brought up at the very beginning of this bill, at what point does it become so deceptive that it becomes felonious? You know, I just don't. So the question is, I suppose there are going to be other aggravating factors along with it that, I mean, there are other charges that probably would go along if it's going to be too intense. But I'm just wondering if we're not setting a limit that says, hey, it's okay to do under 25, and just be careful how you do them. So, Representative Grunberg?
I think the way this is written contains a problem that Ms. Carpinetti was getting at. If you look at the CS on line 5, may not insert false information into a caller identification system. If I was a smart criminal defense lawyer and the person had done it in two different phones, I'd say you didn't make it because it has to be into a single system. And I think we should tighten the bill by saying into one or more caller identification
systems. Or any. I think if...
I want to be sure that it could be...
one or more.
Yeah, it could, and that they could aggregate into a charge.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Samuels?
I have problems with that particular line 4 and 5 myself. I was going to address after this amendment went, but I would offer an amendment to go change 25 to 5 in amendment number 2 throughout the three references and lower it to 5. I'd offer that amendment to amendment 2.
Didn't you make that amendment?
I'm
going to vote for it. I'm going to second it then.
I haven't made anything, Mr. Chair. I think that there are two different...
You made the motion, so no, we're on the table with it now.
Okay.
So it goes under your name, if name means anything on this one. Representative Samuel, you want to defend the discussion?
I'm a hang'em high guy, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, 5 is the amendment. So it would read, information that's transmitted to less than 5 call recipients would then be a Class B misdemeanor, and more than 5 would then become a Class A misdemeanor. True?
Yes, sir, and then 5 or more times to the same call recipient also.
Is there any objection to that amendment? I think you two have made your case, and so I'll not object.
I agree.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Grunberg?
I think I would like to make 2 amendments here.
Surprised.
The first would be on...
All right, just had to do it. That's not part of the record, is it? The 25 to 5 did pass without objection. Yeah, sorry about that. I wasn't very clear on that. Representative Grunberg, you have another amendment?
I do. Two different amendments. The first one is on page 1, line 5. And this to deal with the situation.
You want it? We're still on amendment number 2.
I see. Okay, then let me do the other one first. Thank you.
Thanks for reminding me. I was... That's true. We still have Amendment 2 before us.
Yeah. In sub 2 there, I want to say that's transmitted to 25 or more call recipients. I'm sorry. This should be actually 5.
That was the amendment to amendment.
All the way through. So in 3, actually, Representative Samuels has changed 25 to 5 3 places in the amendment. Okay. I'd like to say on the final 2 lines, transmitted to 5 or more call recipients, or 5 or strike the or, then, comma, 5 or more times to the same call recipient. Or I'm sorry, leave the or in, after recipient and before the period, comma, or a combination of both, and that's a conceptual amendment. So in other words, you could do 1 or 2 calls to one recipient and then several times to the same recipient. We're talking about a total of 5 aggregate.
I think, Representative, maybe I could get the aide to help us a little bit, but the lady who's transcribing this can't go backwards on a keyboard, so I want to make sure that we have it very clear. So could you jot it down in writing and pass it out to the committee,
this is
please?
A conceptual amendment, Mr. Chair. It would be on the final line of amendment number 2. After the word recipient, and before the period, insert the following conceptually, comma, or a combination of both. That's not very elegant, but I think the members can see what I'm saying.
And so, Max, the question is, how would you expect the drafter to clean that up, or a combination of both?
Both 25 or more recipients, I'm sorry, five or more recipients, or five or more times to the same call recipient. In other words, as long as it aggregated five times total.
Okay, and maybe, Ms. Carbonetti, the language of or combination of both, you understand the purpose. Is that something that is something that the Department of Law would see as problem language, or?
I think I understand what you're trying to do. I don't know with a number as low as five whether it, forgive me for using these words, makes sense to me. I guess maybe I don't understand. So you could count up, you called three times?
One person.
To one person, plus you.
Two times to another.
Two times to.
And that, then you've made it the Class A misdemeanor. It's a total of five calls through the chair.
Representative Grunberg, and just for Annie's help to help me answer this for myself, too, is the timing on a charge like that. If it was, if a person was charged with several crimes at one time, I suppose you could aggregate them by saying a combination of both. But if it was two different offenses in the same year and one had already been adjudicated some way, then you could not do that.
No, too late.
So that's the only way that you could aggregate them is if they were somehow being charged within the same frame.
Right, exactly. A course of conduct, and that's something that we have done.
The language or a combination of both is problematic to me because I think of this, and maybe I'm mistaken because I'm no expert in telecommunications or this sort of thing, but we're talking about one entry that results in a certain number of calls. So one entry that would result in five calls to the same person, or one entry that would result in 25 or more calls to a universe of people. I think we're talking about apples and oranges when we say a combination of both. So that's a concern I have about this proposal.
Ms. Holmes?
Thank you. So just to clarify, under the language that we have in front of us, if you had somebody who falsified the information in the caller ID, I'm thinking a domestic violence situation, and called the same number using the same false information, say, 5 or 10 times over the course of a week or 10 days, that would not count, you would not aggregate those up because it didn't happen at the same time?
That's my understanding of it, and maybe I'm mistaken, but, you know, what I consider this offense is to make a false entry into some sort of communication system that results in maybe 5 calls to a victim of domestic violence or 25 people that you're trying to scam or more. I assume you're correct, Representative Samuels, when you say a lot of these scams would be to a lot bigger universe than 25 people or 5 people.
The chair, the way that caller ID spoofing works is you could do it individually. You could use a caller ID card and spoof one person and spoof another and spoof another, or you could call the same person multiple times, or you could use some sort of automated system where you could call thousands of people. I think this bill, from what my understanding of reading it, I'm not a lawyer, is that every time you make that connection between whatever type of system or software or hardware you're using to make that false caller identification show up on that person's system, that's an act. That's one act. So each act adding up to five should be.
That's not what it says.
All right, Representative Samuel.
If we could to get to the point that Representative Grunberg had is under number one to say that it's transmitted less than five times, and the number B is transmitted five or more times. It doesn't matter then who you transmit it to. doesn't matter who the recipients are. If I call five people, if I call one person five times, the crime is then the same.
Right.
That would be acceptable to me.
Restate that again, Representative Samuel.
Say information under a Class B misdemeanor, if a person inserts false information that is transmitted less than five times, except as provided in Section 2. And then in the Section 2, it would be five or transmitted five or more times. We don't care if it's one recipient or multiple recipients. It's just the number of times that you transmitted it.
Through the chair, I don't disagree with you at all. That's what I meant to say, is there was different ways that you're not just entering in five into one machine and it shoots out five different calls. Each call
is one transmission.
It's one transmission, correct.
So, Representative Grunberg, you think that would be better than the combination of both language?
Yes, I and I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Except for it's her amendment.
No, it's an amendment. I have to, that's right.
Friendly amendment to his amendment.
Before we go.
Yes.
He can't do that. I have to withdraw my amendment, right. And he has to make the new one. I'll withdraw my amendment.
And that could bring us to, if you want to give credit to Representative Holmes, or if you want to go ahead and restate it.
I would amend Amendment 2 by, and conceptually, I'll let the drafters worry about the exact language here, but so it would read information that is transmitted to less than, is it is transmitted less than five times, and then under Class A, it is information that is transmitted five or more times.
So in effect, what we're doing, we are taking call recipients out. And that would be on sub one, taking call recipients out and putting times in, less than five times. True?
True.
And then on sub two, transmitted
five or more times.
Taking the word two out, transmitted five or more times, and then we take and delete call recipients out.
Delete the rest of it. It'd be five or more times.
And then delete from or five or more times to the same recipient, just to limit, delete that. Does our transcriber have that fairly clearly? Okay. Even I'm catching up with you. Okay, does everybody understand what the amendment is? Is there any Representative Holmes?
I'm not objecting. I have a question.
Okay. Well, let's we'll go ahead and dispense that. That brings that without objection before us. And then, so now we have before us Amendment Number 2 as amended.
And my amended. Other thing went not to the amendment, so I'll wait to make that. And I'll
Representative Holmes?
Mine is a clarification question. Now that we've amended Amendment 2, are we still left with the same problem, which is the time frame in which these things have to occur? Do you still see that as, in other words, if five or more calls are made over the course of a month, are we still in the position where you cannot aggregate them to take it into a Class A?
Representative Holmes, and the question I asked fell along that line, that would be the charging authority at this point. You could, over a period of a year, charge somebody of the multiple offenses as long as it was the event of charging, if I understand correctly.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that if a person inserts the false information that is transmitted over a period of time, I think we could aggravate those times if it's one entry, subject to, you know, some reasonable limits as to time. I mean, you wouldn't want to go over years.
Statute limitations.
Yeah.
And I guess the question I agree with, and that is, if you have somebody who has been harassing people and you've been trying to catch them, and over a period of 8 months they have done this to 60 individuals, and you've been on their trail but finally do get them, all of those would fall under one charge. It would just be how you would charge them under the statute. And so the charge would be 60 calls, which would put them clearly in the Class A as misdemeanor, right?
I think it would depend on the circumstances, but if it was one entry into a system that resulted in 60 calls over a somewhat discreet period of time. It would be one charge, probably one charge. I think it really depends on the circumstances.
Representative Samuels?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You could also argue it could be 12 charges. Every fifth call is a Class A misdemeanor, so you either have the stalker or the banker scam, and they change the caller ID or don't change the caller ID. You know, one day I'm UBS, and one day I'm NBA, and then I'm Wells Fargo, and then I'm this. 5, 10, 15 is at 3 Class A misdemeanors.
If you're changing the information that you're inserting, I that's a new act of inserting false information.
Representative Holmes?
Sorry, my head's getting a little tied up here. So, but if you do change it every time, then you do one day I'm Wells Fargo, and the next day I'm Bank of America, and the next day, and then I'm changing it each time, then are you saying that we cannot aggregate those because each one is a separate insertion, and therefore you can't get to five if they change it every time, if they insert different information each time, you're never going to be able to aggregate?
I think the circumstances would be if you're putting Wells Fargo in there, you're going to be reaching hundreds of people. So I don't think it's a concern with that sort of.
Just to follow up on that, and I'll get to Max.
Well, but in the case of a domestic violence, for instance, you might put in a different information each time. Say I say I'm Donald Duck one time, and I say I'm, Joe Smith the next time, and I keep coming up with different personas to try to get the person to pick up the phone. It might be that I'm actually putting different information each time, yes, and then we could never actually aggregate to the five under the language. I'm just trying to figure out what we need to do to this language to pick up.
You'd still have several misdemeanors, too.
On that point, Mr.
Gruenberg? I mean, they're all
Gruenberg.
Misdemeanors, but you could have...
But to be able to aggregate,
I think
that's my concern.
I would think that it's somewhat a matter of prosecutorial discretion, but if it's one course of conduct, let's say in the domestic violence situation, the person is targeting their former girlfriend, let's say, and they over a period of a month make five calls from five different phones indicating they're five different people, that would be a course of conduct and that could be aggregated. For sentencing, let us say, and this is a second scenario, let us say they, over a period of a week, they make 20 phone calls. On Monday, Wells Fargo. On Tuesday, Bank of the North. On Wednesday, North Rim, etc. You might charge them differently. The question is whether you can sentence them consecutively or they would merge for the purpose of a single sentence. And that, I think, under constitutional law, would really depend on whether it's one course of conduct. Am I not right, through the chair?
I believe you're correct.
Representative Samuels also had.
You have statutory direction on consecutive and concurrent sentences that don't necessarily apply to misdemeanors, but we certainly argue them. Generally, the legislature has told the courts that the general approach should be to give consecutive sentences for different offenses.
Okay, thank you. Representative Samuels had something on that.
On that point was, we might be better off, I mean, if you have, I think in the bank scenario it's going to be huge numbers, but in the stalker scenario, you're better off with 10 Class B misdemeanors than aggregating it into one Class A. So I would, I'm happy with the language the way it is and leave it up to the prosecutor. Because if somebody keeps changing it and they have a shot at whacking the person who's doing the stalking, then you're better off with what we've got, unless you just want to make it all Class A. I mean, that's an option also. So
I think that if you have a series of Class B misdemeanors, you can get to a larger sentence than you might possibly with one Class A. So eventually.
Senator Gruenberg?
It's also more difficult to prosecute, though. Have to prove each crime separately rather than just putting them all into one crime, and then all they have to prove is that there were a total of five and they could have been on Monday or Wednesday or Thursday. That's just kind of an aside.
Representative just for my part, before we get to the vote on the amended amendment number two, is my suspicion is that when the Department of Law or anybody else is going to go prosecute this, this will be one of many other charges, whether it's stalking, whether it's domestic violence, arrest, whether it's in some fraudulent behavior intended to take your bank or, all the way down to identity theft. So,
probably so.
With that, I'm going to bring up the amendment, which is amendment number two has been amended. And I think we have it all fairly well settled. So is there any objection to this amendment? With that, amendment number two as amended, that brings the bill before us. Is there any other amendment? Representative Gruenberg.
Go ahead. I'll yield.
Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page one, line four, as we have learned, the caller identification system is the recipient. So on line four, it says a person may not insert false caller identification. I'm thinking it should say a person may not transmit false information rather than insert, because you're not inserting it into that caller identification.
That
was the same on my amendment that got withdrawn.
Through the chair, Representative Samuels, insert and transmit, because insert would be on your end, putting it into the computer, and then transmitting would actually be going to the recipient.
So when you're saying inserting, you're making the call. If I insert Donald Duck into there and I make a phone call to you, I'm inserting that into your system instead of transmitting it into, because we've used transmit before in the amendment. It seems that I insert it into my system to transmit it into your system. That's the way that I understand it, but I'm not a phone guy, so.
Right, then the caller identification picks up the false information and displays it to the recipient, so that's on his end.
Page one, line four, a person may not, should we change insert into transmit? I guess ask Ms. Carpinetti at her.
May I inquire?
Representative Gruenberg?
When we last visited this bill, we were told that somebody sets it up and then an employee may actually press the button. And we were trying to get at the person who, well, the policy call is, assuming we have the intent to defraud, we would want to get the person who set it up and also the person who pressed the button. So, you know, we don't want to let one of these two people off the hook. So I would suggest maybe insert or transmit. And that probably should go on line 10, too, huh? I'm sorry. Okay. Then we have, in back in amendment number two, we have transmit. I guess that's okay. Or we also have inserts. We're going to have to make certain that amendment two tracks what we're doing in the new Samuels amendment number three, which we can leave to the bill drafter and Jane Pearson, just to make sure that I would ask that.
As a matter of fact, I was going to suggest that after we get some of these language things set out and before we pass it out of committee, I would suggest we bring the CS back before the committee just to make sure, because we've had several conceptual amendments, and I will not do that to the chairman who is absent. Although we could elect him to some office, I'm sure. But, I think the best thing to do is bring this back before us in its final version.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to do that, but there are huge questions that we're trying to navigate through with just Class A and Class B misdemeanors. I know that doesn't change the whole world, but this hits the edge of not only fraud, but of the ability to take people's personal ID and things like that. It bushes up against the identity theft issues.
Well, I would then, I don't know if I may, Mr. Chair.
You may, Mr. Gruenberg.
I would ask, and I don't know that Representative Samuels had actually made an amendment, but if he hasn't, I would just say.
He tried to trump you on one earlier.
Fair enough.
Well, then I would suggest that we, after the word insert on line 4 and wherever else necessary in the bill, we add after the word insert or transmit.
And I think that that would probably make the language consistent throughout the bill as we understand it. Mr. Moffitt, any suggestions, any comments?
Through Chair, Representative Coghill, when I was talking to the drafters, the word insert was kind of used, kind of like a circuit. You know, you insert the information into some sort of software or computer, and then it transmits when you hit go, and it dials a number and goes out, and then it's transmitted. So there's two separate things. So I think saying insert and transmit kind of completes the circuit. So I do think it's a good idea.
That'll be Amendment 3.
That would be Amendment number 3. That would be. Yeah. So Amendment number 3, line 4, a person may not insert or transmit, adding the words or transmit between insert and false on line 4. Is there any objection to that? Hearing none, that will be put into the bill.
Mr.
Chair? Yes, sir.
Then on line...
Grunberg.
Thank you. On line 5, I am concerned, and I go back to the domestic violence perpetrator, who would go to one phone one day and one phone another day and one phone and third day. So I would say instead of a caller identification system, say one or more caller identification systems or something similar to that. Ms. Carr, no, you don't like
any.
That.
I don't think that's necessary. You have a caller identification. It can be this one or another one.
Well, what I'm to the chair.
Representative Grunberg.
The thing I'm concerned about is a smart defense lawyer saying that this really requires that the prosecution show that they all came from the same caller ID system. I want you to be able to aggregate. So one day did it from one and one day did it from another to make certain that those could be aggregated.
Through the chair, I think with the principles of legislative interpretation and the drafting manual, when you say a caller identification system, you include any. It's like this one or another one.
Could we...
Representative Grunberg, I would tend to agree with her only because we delineate so specifically what that is in sub 1 and 2.
Could I ask Ms. Pearson, when she contacts the drafter to have this done, to just confirm that, and if an amendment is necessary, to have that included. But otherwise,
Mr. Grunberg, we would be more than happy to give this the chairman of this committee more work. I just wanted that on the record. Oh, maybe she can put it on the record. No, that's fine. The request, Jane. Anytime they're absent, we want to load them up. Representative Grunberg.
And again, since we're really looking at this carefully, on lines 13 and 14, don't they now sometimes have calls that are not over, would be by a telephone? Are all of these by telephone? They certainly, with the Wi-Fi, they may not be over a telephone line, but are they all over telephones? Is there any other means of communication, it should be included.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, it says, what line was that again, Representative Grunberg?
13 and 14.
Caller means person who places a call by telephone or over a telephone line, even if the person begins the call on a computer. So that would cover...
Representative Lynn has something.
Wait, with that, some of this stuff is done in a thing called VOIP, voice over what the Internet Protocol, whatever that stands for. And... because a lot of long-distance calls are being made over VOIP. And I would suppose even if a person begins a call on the computer, that would be how you do a VOIP. I suppose you could specify a VOIP, but I think that it gets a little too intricate. If it begins a call on a computer, you can't begin a call on a computer unless it's over VOIP, as I understand it.
Representative Grunberg?
No, as long as it is, we're covered. I just want to be sure.
I think the devices will change names because I never in my life thought I was just going to be answering a BlackBerry. But it is considered a telephone.
Through the chair, may I make a comment on that? I was just informed that a wife, if a person is originating a telephone call by computer that has what I call, what Representative
Voice over IP.
VoIP.
That doesn't go over a telephone line.
A what?
That does not go over a telephone line. So we might want to suggest...
This is by telephone? See, I don't... Through the chair.
It's by internet.
The question is... Is it then by a telephone, or do we need to insert something?
I think we need to insert something if you want to.
But the question, Ms. Carpinetti, then would be if you place a call by a telephone or over a telephone line, and then the qualifier, even if it begins on a computer. So you have both, don't you have both? You have a telephone line plus whatever a telephone. The telephone line is not.
By using the word even if you are. Modifying you are limited to telephone line, the way this is written. I'm sorry.
I see what you're saying.
May I ask
to say
you?
That? But I think it's correct.
I thought we had that covered.
Representative Gruenberg.
One of two things. Do you want to answer now, or you can delay and check it out? Do you want an amendment now, or do you want to check it out, and we could have it added into the CS, or what do you want to do?
I think it would be an easy draft fix to.
Mr. Chair.
Include any sort of communication.
You talk to the bill drafter. Let's see
I'll
what
Representative. Conceptual amendment.
Before we do that, let me get to Representative Lynn.
As I begin to call on a computer, I suppose one could add on a computer or internet.
Representative Gruenberg.
I don't have any problem. Can we just sort of leave it up to the staff to do
I
that?
I think since I've already stated that I think CS has to come back before us, that's one question that you can work to get a CS on. So that's an amendment, but we'll just have to approve the amendment when we get it before us. This is the privilege of having one of the first bills in Judiciary Committee.
I should have delayed it.
At this point, it's kind of like we examine everything on the raft, and then later on we're letting big ships go by. Representative Samuels, you had something?
No, I was going to welcome. We got some close-up students with us in the back. No? No? High schooling.
Welcome to our class.
Welcome.
And I'd like to welcome somebody, a special guest, could I?
It's an introduction of guests is usually reserved for the floor, but we'll go for it. Representative Gruenberg.
We have a young intern who lives up the hill here, and his dad works in my office, Mr. Aaron Cohen. He's working for Representative Ramirez, who isn't here to introduce him. He's in the bright blue tie.
Representative Holmes.
Well, we appear to be on introduction of guests, Mr. Chairman, if you'll allow me. I have a new intern in my office, Masha Muscovaya. Got it. Who is visiting us from Archangels, Russia. Yes. And we have the pleasure of her company in our office for, I think, the next 3 weeks before passing her off to somebody else.
Well, you get the privilege of watching us amend bills in the Judiciary Committee. So with that, I'm going to hold over to the next meeting this bill with the expectation of having a CS before us. And any other business for the Judiciary Committee? With that, we're adjourned.